Welcome back. I think episode 262, if I have that right.
I believe so.
262. So, Joe, I think this week, Joe Biden delivered a speech addressing the soul of the nation, labeled, whatever that means. I guess because it's a soulless nation at this point. Pretty much robbed of any meaning or unifying or even people. Anyway, it was a primetime speech. It wasn't cared by any of the networks outside CNN and maybe MSNBC. Maybe that means something that the other networks decided to ignore a presidential address to the nation. Maybe there's a infighting within the faction. This was Thursday night. Joe Biden, I think, came out and declared war on, I guess, roughly half of the American population. I would say probably almost 75-80% of America's ethnic white population, and 90% of its white male population. It was a tirade, sort of an unhinged speech. I think a psychological term that can best define the speech is projection, right? I mean, he's accusing his political opponents of everything that he and his party and his ilk are guilty of. He referred to Donald Trump supporters as MAGA forces, which is sort of a military identification, I guess you could say. They're a threat to this country. He called, MAGA, which is, I guess, people in the Republican Party who still support Trump or may vote for Trump if he is to run in 2024, as a clear and present danger to the country. He accused MAGA of, embracing the ideology of semi-fascism. Now, I've had a problem enough defining what fascism is, and I'm sure we're going to have a much more difficult way trying to define semi-fascism. He justified, the White House said that the attack was justified, the rhetorical attack by part of the president, he said the MAGA is guilty of undermining the right to vote, supporting laws banning and restricting abortion. Well, okay, that's an opinion. We can debate that issue. I guess the Supreme Court is MAGA now too, the majority Supreme Court, and repealing gay marriage. There was any ever laws passing gay marriage. I think that was judicial activism. But I guess this was a position Joe Biden himself, I think, took as recently as 2012, that same-sex marriage wasn't a right. Now, apparently, you are a fascist if you oppose same-sex marriage, even though it had to be imposed on by judicial fiat and never enjoyed widespread support among the American people. Probably still doesn't if they stop to think about it. The speech was called A Battle for the Soul of the Nation, and maybe it is, maybe not the way he thinks it is. It was delivered at Philadelphia's Independence National Historical Park, and with the background sort of they intended red, white, and blue, but it appeared to be blood red, satanic. And there's only, now, the only part of the speech I thought made any sense during the entire tirade, during the whole otherwise incomprehensible counterfactual tirade, when he said, "Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal." Yes, but they've destroyed normal, haven't they?
Yeah. Whose fault is that?
He calls for unity and for common values, but roughly since 1965, they've destroyed any idea of a common people or values under the guise of multiculturalism, mass immigration, diversity, these things. So there you have it. So, I couldn't bring myself to listen to the entire speech from beginning to end. I just saw, I listened to excerpts from it and saw videos of it. It looked ridiculous. There is the background. He comes out with his wife. His wife kind of leads him to the podium. Then he's in the background. You have two Marine guards for some reason, I guess. That's supposed to be, presidential decorum or ornate feeling or military. I don't know. Then you have this blood red background, which from the shadows gave a sort of a neo-fascist architecture appearance, coupled with a sort of a satanic know, Gates of Hell type background. At the same time, he's accusing his opponents of being fascist. So I enjoy the irony there. So what's your take on it?
Well, first of all, the content of the speech and also the obvious symbolism of the forum are not, you know, and neither one are have anything to do with a democratic republic. I mean, they are the words were the words of a dictator, right? I mean, the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism. You know, I mean, it's just third world banana republic dictatorship language, and the actual, you know, set was, I think, very, very important to understand because it was beyond anything that, you know, represents dictatorship that we've seen historically. Mm-hmm. You know, the Soviet dictators, you know, Stalin, they would have, you know, a set that would represent power. You know, there's a way to, you know, set these individuals up as, you know, to intimidate the people like listening to these speeches. But I've never seen anything. I mean, even in like the worst overacted Hitlerian, you know, tirades, never had anything this dictatorial in its imaging.
Yeah, the Nazis had better sense of style. You have to give them that.
Yeah, and Hitler comes across as a much more rational, friendly individual than Biden did. But anyway, my point is that
that's true. I mean, yeah, if you do actually take the time to like read a Hitler speech or something, it actually his arguments are much more rational than Joe Biden's.
Of course, and they're much more democratically founded. I mean, this was really just hard edge dictatorship. But the important thing is just to remember that you're looking at propaganda. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what you're looking at. So what they're doing, we've talked about this 100 times, they're transitioning Americans and particularly, you know, white Americans and especially white male Americans into the understanding that there is no democracy, that there is no, you know, that at the top, the political system is simply opposed to you and it does what it wants to do and you don't have any ability to change it. And the satanic imaging of the president's speech just underlines that. You had said that, you know, the definition of fascism is very mercurial at this point in our nation's history. And I would say actually it's fairly clear cut. What it means is it is a slur against any white people trying to have democratic representation.
Yeah, that goes back to the authoritarian personality. Yeah,
exactly. This is what it is.
It's a psychological. It's more of a psychological disposition than it is a political ideology to these people.
Yeah, it's a double bind. I mean, again, these are the concepts that we've talked about for years. That it indicates that you are neurosis. You're neurotic. In just your very being, just as you are.
Political opposition is pathological. It's a pathology.
It's not pathological, and it's neurotic. It's anti-Semitic. You're not multicultural. It's all of these, you know, the things that the authoritarian personality defines as neurotic, which you can flip on its back and look at these things as just normal democratic power and representation of a majority, right, in a democracy. But now when you get to Biden's speech, you're seeing that they're, you know, they've really come to a further kind of point of power where they can start even having these kinds of symbolism where the president and the presidency is no longer something that's from the people or, you know, has any relationship to the people at all. And that was the part of the Biden's presentation that I think was the most vivid, is just that was not, you know, the red background and the soldiers, you know, at either side of him and his constant fist clenching. These aren't, you know, this isn't something that takes place in a democracy. These are the trappings of dictatorship, and they're just transitioning they're trying to transition the people to accept, you know, the political class as being untouchable. And I was just going to mention the one kind of other declaration that was parallel to this was, I don't know if you saw it, but in Germany, the foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, she's a, you know, Masonic witch, WEF, you know, mm-hmm. Green Party. And she said that that it doesn't matter what German voters think, that they will continue to support the Ukraine. So she actually came out and just flat said, I could care less what the German voters do. We're going to support the Ukraine, which is to say that the sanctions are never going to end. You know, we again had to, it's funny how prescient we are. If we talked about this, that the goal of the war is the sanctions, and therefore the war will just go on forever because it is the rationale to have no gas and oil energy coming into Europe. And here you have the Green Party just underlying that position. You know, she just flat out says, doesn't matter what German voters think, sorry, you will not be having, you know, a return to normal energy capacity in the future.
Yeah, there was this, you know, someone talking about this sort of the semi-fascist remark. Joe Biden said that they're semi-fascist. And, you know, well, since fascism, according to the American Jewish Committee's authoritarian personality, again, is more of a psychological condition than an ideology, and is largely characterized by behavior that most people would consider healthy and normal, you know, like a father and a mother, healthy family, respect for, you know, for a legitimate authority, hierarchy, these things that all of us kind of think are as normal, then that is indeed fascism. I guess the supporters of Trump are semi-fascist, then the country is halfway to getting back to normal. And so let's make America normal again. I mean, that's right. For what it is. And it is interesting that, again, projections are very important. Important way to understand this is he accused the Republicans or MAGAs, say MAGA Republicans and whatever, and said they do not recognize the will of the people. They refuse to accept the results of a free election. It's free, by the way. Did I tell you that? And legitimate. By the way, there is no evidence of any fraud or shenanigans. Anyway, and he added they don't respect the rule of law. And this is rich coming from a man and a political party which implicitly, if not explicitly, supported, you know, the Summer of Love, the Black Lives Matter, and Antifa riots of 2020. And in fact, they instrumentalized them to change the election results. Of course, that's part of the strategy that Molly Ball wrote about in the Time magazine piece in February 2021.
Well, what about the rule of law in terms of immigration?
That doesn't matter. Exactly. That's not a law, apparently.
That is not part of the rule of law. That is the rule of law which the Republicans and the white people are in danger of breaching. I mean, they, you know, it's just they're moving the illegals now around in trains and buses, and mayors are actually complaining because they're just being overwhelmed by all of these immigrants.
Well, they want to be sanctuary cities.
this is just,
wait, I mean, we were just virtue signaling. We didn't mean it.
Yeah. So this is double bind. You know, this is just they will say that the criticism of their breaching of the law indicates that you are lawless.
What, first of all, what right-wing hate, white nationalist, white supremacist violence are they referring to? Have there been riots?
Yeah, no, of course not. These are just it's a psychological construction. There is no other purpose. It has no referent in fact. There is nothing like white supremacy. I mean, white people have like zero political power in America. White supremacy? Are you kidding me? So it is a psychological construction for the
purpose. Well, they have no political power because they're psychologically entrapped.
Right, exactly.
They have the biomass if they wanted to, if they had consciousness.
Well, of course, but they don't. They can't exercise it because they have conceded all of the, you know, like the politicians to be elected that fool them. And then when they get into place like Biden and they just breach the rule of law, there isn't really the sense that we don't have the sense of that we need to rebel, which I think will come very quickly here. But at the moment, it just isn't there. And they're, of course, trying to keep tamp it down every way they can. So this is really what you're seeing, is just this psychological struggle between.
Biden tried. I'm a unifier. Then he accuses half the country of being terrorist and racist and fascist, or whatever. But you can't unify a country because there's no American people anymore. They spent, again, since at least, let's go back to 1965, 64, the country has been disintegrating. And it's been disintegrating demographically. That was intentional with the changes with the immigration law and the stand down, the illegal non-enforcement of the laws, like Alejandro Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security, and the human trafficking that the federal government is involved in spreading these illegal immigrants throughout the country. I also argue it's part of the 64 Civil Rights Act, and so the dispossession of the ethnic white majority that formed the country, and the ideas that group embodied and embraced, the idea of America they were said that America law is king. Well, they don't even have that anymore because they don't have an agreement about America's civic principles, because as they dilute the country's population with newcomers as replacements, as they say, no one has any regard or respect for those things, evidently. And they certainly don't have any respect for free speech. You see that. And they're not even teaching it anymore. You don't even learn it.
The idea is that the replacements will just be individuals who have no connection to, a democratic history. They generally come from they come from the third world where you have tin pot dictators and very weak democratic structures. But in any case, they are a perpetual minority, right, that doesn't really have any way to, replace the Judeo-Masonic.
Yes.
I mean, how many, of these individuals do you think will have power in the Pentagon in the next generation? I mean, so they're just they're being brought in as a slave class with a slave mentality. This is why they have them there. Because they'll be completely content with just the welfare state in a very minimal form, right? They don't seem to complain about because they see that as an upgrade to their life. They come from impoverished regions, and they come here. There's a welfare state. There's education, and they're being encouraged to just take over. But at the same time, they're also they are in no way, a competitor for the people that are actually running the country. The only competitor to that would be the Europeans. And we are being, we have the replacements underneath us, and we have the psychological trauma coming from above. And then in the middle of between, we have the vaccine damage. So
yeah, it's the juveniles high low against the middle. A good example of this, it would be Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House spokes lady, who know where she grew. I think she thinks she grew up in France. So I think she's, ethnic Haitian, whatever background. But she sees herself as a marginalized, oppressed person. Therefore, she deserves all privilege. And apparently she, obviously has been given, put in a position that's above her abilities. But again, she's also given up an impossible job to somehow make sense of the Biden administration, that train wreck. But nevertheless, how do you articulate an argument in favor of the policies? Nevertheless, that's what she's paid to do. But she actually said, this shows her sort of, she doesn't really understand the American creed. She says that if your opinion is different than that of the majority, I guess 51%, you're by definition an extremist. What?
Yeah, she's a complete idiot.
But by the way, Biden's approval rating is like 36%. So does that make you an extremist?
Biden's approval rating is entering the Marianas Trench.
Yeah, and that's probably inflated. But that's
and she's talking about only the majority are basically non, extremists. Look, they selected her when she first came on the scene. They had her in public, and I guess she was reading from a speech. And I thought they'd really found a great propaganda item because she was attractive, she's black, she's a lesbian, and she seemed to be clearly clear-minded and well-spoken, albeit politically perverse. But then as soon as they put her on her feet where she has to answer questions, it's an absolute train wreck. The poor thing is so over her head. She doesn't know anything. Well, she knows very little about what she's talking about. And she is, even with the White House press corps, which are obviously controlled opposition.
Very, yes.
They can't take her seriously. So she's an embarrassment.
People aren't just walking into the country.
Right. Yeah.
There's a videotape of people walking into the country by the thousands every day.
Great embarrassment. And but again, it's you know, I wonder if even that is thing that the oligarchs are pleased by, because it's a kind of double bind where the representative is in fact a moron. And then you're thinking that, well, we're supposed to have some kind of expertise and people who are intelligent running the country. And then you have something like this, you know, where she's just an idiot. I mean, why would this person be the press, you know, representative of the president? All of this just breaks down ultimately the sense that you have a connection to politics in this country. Mm-hmm. The only sense when people that I talk to, the normies, you know, have about the country is the false dialectics. They are very interested in whether or not Trump or Hillary wins.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of structure. That something that engages them. They don't really ever question the idea that, well, it doesn't really matter who wins because you're gonna have the exact same foreign policy, financial policy, immigration policy. I mean, they don't think about that. They just think about the optics. They've been taken into this, you know, bull ring of the oligarch's construction, where you root for the bull or the bullfighter, and this is all very important. But the fact is, the actual machinations of democracy, I mean, it's just at the federal level, it's just the people. I can't imagine that we aren't getting to the point of the same relationship between the federal government and the people that they have in Russia and had in the Soviet Union, where people just have given up. They don't even, you know, they just see it's completely corrupt. I have a friend of mine who is Russian. He emigrated and to the U.S. and he said that is the nature of the Russian people, is that they have their reality, which is impoverished in general, or certainly not flourishing. And then there are the oligarchs, and you just know there's nothing you can do about it. You know, there's really, you know, that the elections are ridiculous, that Putin is, you know, he's of a different group. You don't really know much about the group, and you don't really have any kind of emotional connection to it. You just see the elections as something that comes and goes, and you're not that interested. Occasionally, they'll have someone who'll stand up against it, and then that person, they'll typically execute them, and then that's the end of that. And so this is where this is, you know, you look at Biden's speech, you look at the press secretary, you know, you look at the statement by the WEF German green minister, who's actually one of the big shots in the German federal government at this point. It's all the same thing, Tim. It's all the same thing. It's just oligarchs are in control. People have no say in anything. And we're just slowly moving all of you away, further and further away from just the idea that there is something here you can affect. You know, that's
yeah, there's his use of the term. He said that MAGA supporters, Trump supporters, Republicans, I guess, conservative Republicans, right wingers, I guess, which make up roughly half the country, again, I would say a supermajority of America's ethnic white population, represent a clear and present danger to democracy, to our republic. And using the term clear and present danger was particularly invidious or provocative, because that is a legal term that's been traditionally used to justify restrictions of free speech or free expression. So the fact that Biden, who is a lawyer, I mean, I guess maybe he doesn't remember much. I mean, again, he's reading a speech. He didn't do this. He was set up to do this. He's using that term. Again, that's been traditionally used as a pretext for putting people in jail. You know, that's what they did during World War I.
Well, it's actually the legal term is used for the suspension of normal legal process.
Yeah. So and basically, so that, yeah. And of course, he can't cite an incident, really. He's citing a protest regarding a very fishy election. And all of a sudden, this coming from a party which just a few years prior rioted during President Trump's inauguration and actually did far more damage to private property than they did to the Capitol building January 6th. And no one talks about, you know, J20, you know, 2017, talk about J6, you know, trying to, as a marketing thing, as they've spun that narrative, and they have to justify that narrative to justify the sham committee hearings and the trials. This is also coming from an administration which has imprisoned close to 900 people for the mere act of protesting. You know, so, you know, again, we have to see what, you know, invoking free speech as part of our freedom, but then they're suppressing it. And this is funny because just a few weeks ago, we had this attempted assassination, you know, of Salman Rushdie, the author of the Satanic, what was that? The Satanic?
Satanic Verses, I believe.
The Satanic Verses. And there's a fatwa issued against them by the Iranian government, the mullahs, back in 1988 or 89, way back when. Nevertheless, though, I guess the fatwa is still in force because someone tried to assassinate him. He's giving a speech in some liberal town in New York somewhere, upstate, I think. He was stabbed several times. I guess he's expected to survive. Of course, there's a lot of questions about the timing of that. Of course, maybe they're trying to bring back the big bag Muslim meme, and someone should ask whether the would-be assassin had any contact with the FBI prior to this incident, you know, given everything else. But it's funny because just all of a sudden now, when that occurred, the left starts talking about the importance of free speech. Now, that's interesting. Now free speech matters all of a sudden again. I thought you had to suppress free speech, you know. And also it gets the question of who's speaking and what you're supporting, because they like Salman Rushdie because he gets all the Muslims excited, right? The Muslim radicals excited, which is good for Israel, good for the American empire, the Anglo-American Zio empire, and the war agenda. Because, you know, some good old fashioned Islamic terror, Muslim terrorism is always good. Is always good press for the war machine and for the regime, both in America and Europe, because it's always been a policy of inciting it. You know, that goes back to Brzezinski in Afghanistan, stirring up the radicals there to get at the Soviet Union, and also, you know, 9/11 and all that, you know, all that show the past 21 years. But it's the timing was interesting. Because all of a sudden now we're looking at this, it also coincided with this negotiation with Iran regarding the nuclear deal. And so again, that upsets this agreement with Iran, which with Israel wants, because Israel has been looking for an excuse to attack Iran for the better part of, you know, 25 years. But nevertheless, all of a sudden everyone's talking about the importance of free speech. We saw that with the Charlie Hebdo attack. And the Muslim, yeah. All these cartoons that are there to insult Muslims and all that stuff. No sense of respect for Muslim sensibilities or Christian sensibilities, by the way. But at the same time, you have all these laws that Canada just passed a law imposing a 2-year prison sentence for anyone publicly downplaying the Holocaust, whatever that means. So you go to jail for that. So, you know, the regime's very concerned about Jewish sensibilities, but has little regard for Muslim sensibilities, and even lesser for Christian sensibilities, if you look at the cultural agenda. But again, and at the same time, we've had this report about this lawsuit that's exposed the Biden administration's role in coordinating a censorship campaign with big tech, which would be a direct violation of the First Amendment, and therefore an impeachable offense. Because now you have like 85 separate meetings with Biden administration officials suppressing speech on the internet regarding a variety of issues, primarily the pandemic response. But that's a direct assault by a federal government, an organ of the federal government on free speech. It isn't this public-private thing where it's my private corporation, they can do what they want. No, they are coordinating it with these tech companies. Anyone kind of knows this? Because these tech companies are kind of a spawn of the national security state anyway, if you really look in the history of Google and these things with Intel and CIA. So, you know, they've been embedded with each other for decades. Nevertheless, they try to make that distinction, even though that's a false distinction. At the same time, you had this Mark Zuckerberg, again, Facebook, which is a creature of the CIA, if you go to its history, but Zuckerberg is on the, Joe Rogan experience. And he talks about how the FBI, folks from the FBI, you know how folksy the FBI is, folks from the FBI came by and suggested that they suppress the Hunter Biden story because it might be Russian propaganda. Now we all know that idea that it was Russian propaganda was a deep state conspiracy involving the FBI and also the Clinton campaign going as far back as 2016. So there you have it. So much for free speech, right? I mean,
yeah, free speech is gone. The Biden laptop thing is just a distraction. I mean, this is a way to create the appearance of a real dialectic, you know, as though the left is trying to hide it and the right is unable to ever bring it into the public view. And the fact of the matter is it's just this whole thing is just a distraction and completely irrelevant. I mean, this reminds me of the Anthony Weiner laptop and Pizzagate, you know. I mean,
how they want us to focus on, say, the male genitalia of these political figures. Like, and we're supposed to ignore the fact there are 900 people languishing in prison.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is literally the correct juxtaposition, is that they give you salacious stories, which will eventually, as they come forward, will just, you know, like destroy the political left, you know, as they bring these things out to our, you know, into the public domain. They give these ideas, but they never quite get there. You know, remember, you know, they put Gisela in prison, but somehow the list of clients that there was, you know, like child trafficking to didn't get out for some reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was convicted of child trafficking, but there was no disclosure as to who the children were trafficked to, which you wonder how you could even conduct a trial with such a, you know.
Well, that's the political significance of the Epstein operation, which we're not supposed to look into or think about. That's like when Acosta, who was the U.S. attorney down there, was being vetted for the position of Secretary of Labor for the Trump administration. They asked him about it because it was coming up with this lenient treatment that Epstein got on the part of federal officials and state officials. He said he had to back off because he was told that Epstein belonged to intelligence. Okay, no one asked. There's no follow-up question there?
No, there's nothing. They can't follow up on that. Well, but you know,
move on.
It's all a thing of low-grade pornography that the federal government uses to distract the population from realizing they're being enslaved. You know, it's, you know, you Lewinsky and the oral sex, you know, with a stained dress. I mean, these are the stuff that they're able to put into the news to just keep people away from what is really a true and clear present danger, Tim, which is a dictatorship that is interested in genocide, because this is what we've got.
Having sexual degenerates and perverts in office is a great position for the oligarchs, because these people, you know, lack all character. You know, it's
they're
compromised, easy. And they're also fiends. So
true. And then, of course, the as you learn about them, you start to, you know, you get the impression, because again, this is all subconscious programming, that you cannot interact with the federal power.
There's a scandal I read about recently involved, I forget what state it was. But this is how these things matter when you have sexual deviants and degenerates in office, because they abuse their power. I mean, it's kind of the basics of an authoritarian or dictatorial regime, is those in power will use it to get babes and use coercion, or boys for that matter. Like Beria in the Soviet Union would drive around Moscow, pick up chicks. I mean, kidnap them, and because he's Beria, they had to submit to him. There was a case where a child protective service officer was using a position over a woman, a single mother, to take their kids away if she didn't have sex, you know, sexual relations with her. So coercing a woman who is not lesbian, have a lesbian relationship with her. It's not just desire, it's also an act of humiliation. But it was exposed. It turns out this woman had a relationship, the child protective service officer had a relationship with the police chief, who was an avowed lesbian. Presumably was being protected by her for the longest time.
When I use the when I use the expression cesspool,
yeah,
this would almost be like a step up from the kind of moral situation we have near it.
Yeah, well, there was a time when people's sexual behavior was linked to their character. And there was a notion of what proper behavior was. This is where important morality matters. Morality is a leveler. It makes us play by the same rules, and you can judge people by their behavior. And the indication that you know you have untoward relationships, unnatural relationships between various government officials might affect policy and how they execute their powers. I just might have an impact on their character, and their sexual behavior might impact how they pursue their how they execute their political powers that they're entrusted with.
Just remember, long-term destruction of the family. I mean, for example, look at like the Clinton Lewinsky thing as a, just as a psychological structure. What effect does that have on family production? You have the president of the United States having this, like very bizarrely detailed sexual relation with like an aide. How does that actually affect the national psychology? And at the same time, when pornography is like, starting to inch forward into like the internet world. Look, these things are all structured to break apart the family, to create isolation, to create a slave class. It's almost just routine at this point to look at the world in this way, that what we're seeing is artificial. It's given to us as history unfolding, but in fact, it's structured, and the structure is malevolent. It's to make us impotent, to make us not able to have family production, to not able to relate to our ethnicity. I mean, this stuff goes back to the Frankfurt School, for God's sakes, or even before that into the Hungarian Soviet, with all the stuff we've talked about, how they tried to destroy the psychology of the Christian Hungarians, right? When the Jewish Bolsheviks got in power, what did they do?
I mean, what's interesting is you mentioned the Lewinsky thing, of course, late 90s. This is the same time the Communications Decency Act was being debated in the past, which allowed pornography to be streamed unlimited on the internet. Shoot ahead 20 years, and now they're openly talking about restricting political speech on the internet, but doing nothing to regulate pornography, because pornography is free speech, but political speech isn't free speech. It has to be regulated openly. They're talking about this
exactly, but it's logical. It's one and the same thing. I mean, when you get rid of the clear-mindedness and virtue that is needed to create a real democracy and real family and real ethnic connections, and you replace it with pornography and political impotence.
Yeah,
this is just the world we live in. And the problem is, and I want to digress for one second just to bring up an important paper that I'm hoping people will read. It was by Stephanie Seneff and et al. Peter McCullough was one of the people who signed on to it. And it's entitled SARS-CoV-2 Spike Protein in the Pathogenesis of Prion-like Diseases. I mentioned, a couple months ago that as I saw the science, it was coalescing around the idea that the real destructive aspect of the vaccine would be amyloidosis. You'd have this plaque being formed in the body over a very long period of time, and
it's causing the strokes, right?
It's causing everything.
A 20-year-old hockey player dropped dead last night.
Yeah, and this would be an explanation, because the symptoms would be related to how much of the misfolding of the proteins and the different areas that the vaccine has been able to get into would bring about. And it occurs into different rates in every single person. It's sort of like Russian roulette, or actually more like roulette. You don't really know how much is going to affect where when you put this stuff in your body. But anyway, I would say that every citizen, particularly all those of us who are purebloods, to use an expression, need to understand what they're talking about here, because you're going to have friends and family that will probably be dealing with these issues, and you need to start developing the idea of therapeutics. There are seemingly some that have, can slow it down, this process. But we also need to just have a general awareness of this fact that this is going on, so that we can affect our local politicians. I mean, remember, this will be denied. No matter how many bodies pile up in the sidewalks, mainstream media and the political class will just say it doesn't exist, or that it's caused by climate change or whatever, however they want to characterize. Well, this is sophistry. In order to survive, we need to like make sure that every local politician we can influence, the supervisor, anyone who has any access to political representation, has to be aware of this, so that we can start to make a radical local reactions to the assault that is being waged against us. We can see now really clearly what the European winter is going to be like. I mean, the energy crisis will just worsen. Food is going to be in short supply. The currency will be weak, not able to buy much. And you're going to be dealing with an immune system that's been damaged. So that is a pretty negative scenario. And it's one from which hopefully rebellion can start to foment.
Well, this is why, I guess, perhaps Klaus Schwab and the WEF, the World Economic Forum, are now trying to recruit information warriors to stamp out remarks like yours, free speech on the internet.
Exactly.
This is known as they're calling it as a pandemic of free speech on the internet. So he's calling for information warriors to police the internet, social media, such, analysis or comments. Regarding the vaccine or a variety of other issues for that matter, the economic crisis. Basically, the World Economic Forum, I guess they want organizations to label certain information misinformation, basically remove from the internet this information which they don't find congenial to their interest or they happen to disagree with. But who are they? What's misinformation? Is it misinformation to say that the vaccines are safe and effective? Evidently, yes. Is it misinformation to say that vaccines prevent the spread of the disease and prevent infection? Well, yes, it is, evidently, as that's what it shows. That they're admitting it now. So misinformation depends on timing. there's no truth, just someone's truth, I guess. So they want to recruit 110,000 information volunteers will be equipped. I'm sure there's organizations well-funded and companies to set this up. Just sort of, I guess, algorithmically cleanse the internet of such things. They've already done this. I mean, Google is dead as a useful search engine. You have to find workarounds and these things. So that what they did, the YouTubing is what we previously discussed regarding the Biden administration, and it's coordinating with big tech to suppress these things because they can't contend with any criticism or scrutiny or any meaningful political opposition. They want literally a one-party state.
Yeah, it's a one-party state, and in fact, it's a one, Judeo-Masonic intellectual structure political state. It's not even a party. It's just an oligarchy. So it'll be interesting to see how they attack us, because obviously, shows of our stature will be on the chopping block, right?
We talked about it. We're back. It's sort of, you alluded to what's going on in Germany. And I read an interesting article, the Z-Man, about the political leadership. And he's talking about what's going on in Germany, where people are posting pictures of their utility bills, where literally it's gone up 5-10 times in 1 month. And and you mentioned that German lady saying this is going to keep going. And the political class don't seem to care that the people are going to freeze to death and starve to death if they keep these policies going. Germany's hitting the one, large, because Germany simply cut itself off from energy for its industrial capacity. Of course, industrial capacity supports its population. So we've talked about sort of a Morgenthau Plan 2.0 they're doing there. The Germans are imposing on that. And the political class don't seem to care. And the Zeman article says, for the longest time, they always talk about the masses, the mob getting too raucous and violent. And he says the problem is they're too complacent, too peaceful, and they're not willing to consider the fact that the people who are governing them are simply evil.
Well, this is exactly the problem. I mean, this is literally 100% and expressed perfectly clearly what the problem is. is that the oligarchs have been able to psychologically condition the public to not respond to not just evil, but to genocide. I mean, this is what they're trying to do to us with all of the bamboozling and the guilt, the double bind, the sophistry. We're so confused that when things like the situation in Ukraine and the sanctions are leading to literally a winter where there is not enough energy to heat the home, mm-hmm. that the public's response is to, you know, blame Putin or something. You know, they are just looking at the wrong target here.
So Macron, you sent me that speech from Macron saying the age of abundance is over. Well,
right.
Well, Monsieur, you know, Mr. President, it's been the age of abundance has been over for a lot of people for a long time. I don't know about you. There are people out there really suffering. So, but he talks as if he says it's climate change. He's blaming it on the weather. He's blaming it on Putin. And these are direct policies that his government, following the direction, you know, of the NATO powers, has inflicted upon their own people. And he's talking as if it's, you know, it's because of climate change or Putin and all that. You know, and so you're gonna have to, you know, you have to go hungry and be cold. Sorry, and
you are suffering and freezing because of your own darn fault, because mm-hmm. you have overused the resources in the planet, and you are to blame. And in order to heal the problem, you simply have to die. That's it. That is the build back better, the zero pollution phenomena. They're trying to get the Europeans to think that the appropriate response to all of these problems is for them to go out of existence, and that will solve all of the problems. This is insane, right? This is the literal definition of insanity to fall into something like that. And the question is just, as we go into this winter, particularly in Europe. I mean, the U.S., I think, is on the chopping block, of course, you know, downstream. But it looks like this next winter and the winter thereafter will be Europe's time to depopulate. The question is will the overt genocide break through the psychological conditioning and find, you know, real Europeans able to defend themselves and wanting to defend themselves? And if this happens, then the first step, of course, is to recognize that the political class is malevolent. You're not going to negotiate with them. There's no point in protesting. Protesting isn't going to have any effect on Annalena Baerbock, the Green chairperson, who is, you know, has already said that doesn't matter what the voters do, we are just going to continue with the sanctions. So you're going to have to fight. And now,
well, I mean, does it make any difference that the guillotines and scaffolds are carbon neutral?
It makes no difference to me. I'm perfectly happy to deal even with, like, this really has come down to, at this point, we are in a, in a crisis, what they call an existential crisis. And I would just say, I can't imagine morally what is off the table.
Well, we have a political class which appears to be completely deluded or separated from reality in Europe and here in the States. In California, your governor announced that he's, by 2035, his plan is to have, I don't know where Gavin Newsom will be in, 13 years from now, but had the state banning the sale of all gas-powered vehicles and introducing electrical vehicles, as if these things just are powered by pixie dust or something. The state's already experiencing brownouts. They're anticipating rolling blackouts to deal with the energy shortages there. And they, of course, are blaming the weather. And that might have some sporadic cause for that. But from what I understand, it's like they're talking about like drought. But I read earlier this year that the water authority there released 2/3 of its the water gets from the snow to save a few salmon. And this was traditionally they used for hydraulic power and also for agriculture, but they released 2/3 of their supply, which was more than enough. I think the supply standards have 5 years of reserves, which they had, and they released it, emptied it into the Pacific Ocean for no, right, and because, supposedly to save a few fish. Now, who buys that?
Right.
And that, and I saw pictures of where you have homeless encampments at the charging stations.
Indeed. In fact, 2 days after you had the announcement that, that we were going to complete transition to electric cars, the government issued a statement that you shouldn't use the electric charging stations for electric cars because we don't have the electricity to meet the demand. There is the idea that California would have enough electricity to supply all of the cars with power. I mean, there is no plan in place for this. This is just a fantasy. Electric cars are very, very popular here in California because they're so much less expensive to drive currently, right? I mean, they are just less expensive, and middle-class people are converting to them just because of the government policy that have made, oil so expensive. Mm-hmm. Gasoline is still $6 a gallon here in California. Yeah. And at that price, like we took a drive in our electric car to Eureka from Santa Barbara, and it cost us $40 round trip. The same trip would have cost close to $300 if we'd been driving a gas.
Yeah, but the cost being absorbed elsewhere because...
Of course. And this is, it's a fool's paradise because if everyone has an electric car, Jim, I couldn't even get across the street. There wouldn't be, that'd be how much power I'd have available. So it's just,
it's a boutique thing. And it's not practical. Now we've talked about energy, even gasoline, the fact that you're so dependent on petroleum-based gasoline, that goes back to decisions made in the early 20th century to destroy ethyl alcohol as a competing source of energy. So it's not, the abundance or the ubiquity of automobiles as social engineering when they destroyed, this all goes to speak to urban planning, creation of suburban interstate highway system and these things that occurred in the last century that have sort of shaped, people come to accept this as normal, but this is all social engineering. Cities used to have electric vehicles. They were called trolleys, right? I mean,
of course.
And no, it made no sense to have cars packed in the cities, but they did it anyway.
You could easily set up a situation where it'd be non-polluting and plenty of electrical
energy. Trams, like in Europe.
This could easily be done, but you'd have to actually have, like a benevolent political class to do this. When you have a malevolent one, all they can think about is how to like use this for social engineering to their terms. And then eventually now they're going to use it as a way to reduce the economic output of the nation.
It's the same thing with chemical fertilizers, right? Where they've get agriculture, big agri has created a situation where agriculture is largely dependent upon them. And now they want to phase them out and provide no solution and tell everyone to starve to death. When if the past 60 years they devoted the same thing to more efficient, better, organic farming, or even a combination, sort of a combination of the both. Because to me, it's a question of degree. No, they've created this, but they've even forgotten the idea of crop rotation in many respects. so they destroyed, depleted the soil.
Exactly right. They've made the citizen so impotent, he doesn't know how to produce. I mean, when they take away the corn chips and the Slurpees from the inner city, you will have mass starvation, which will then, of course, force this tranche out into the suburbs, which is what they want, so that we just slaughter one another. Again, this is, perhaps not like a completely coherent analogy, but we grow our food here. We have in our property, we have 4 raised beds, which could all fit into like a normal living room, I would say. Tim, we produce more food than we can eat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible how much the world, the earth will give you if with a little bit of science. And we don't use any chemicals at all. We're completely incompetent. We don't have the slightest idea how to farm, but nevertheless, if we just put the right plants in and put water on them, by God, the plants come up and there's all, tomatoes and zucchinis. You just can't get rid of all this stuff. So this is an artificial situation. And of course it can be, the idea that the world is so polluted, the famine that is going to come is a cleansing thing, where there's too many people. These are absurd concepts. These are just psychological warfare against the public, so that they think that they're starving and freezing to death is actually somehow part of the process to heal, you know, nature with. Look, we're being murdered. These policies are all there. They are, you know, they don't stand any scrutiny as you pointed out, as real, you know, governmental policies. If you get into and try to understand them, it's sort of like getting California getting rid of all of its water to save a few salmon. How many salmon are being saved? I mean, we have like at our where we live, we have creeks which are all, you know, part of this the California stream system, which benefits from the release of the water. I mean, you can, I mean, in a good year, you might have like 2-4 inch salmon come up about 100 yards before they get eaten by, you know, by coyotes. I mean, there is just no, there is no salmon kind of benefit that is occurring from this absolute destruction of California's water system. It's just that it has no other function other than to make the state, you know, to try to function without water. This will reduce the crops, right? Of course, this is a huge goal of the oligarchs. Mm-hmm. And because California has been, you know, historically such a, you know, a greenhouse for the nation in terms of food production. And so it's all just part of the starvation plan. The way this is working is that they do everything needed to reduce the total calories that are available anywhere. And then as the starvation, you know, onsets, they blame, you know, overuse of like gas cars and things for climate change and say they're doing everything they can in order to, you know, the government is blameless. In fact, it's actually they're trying to help, you know, bring in more Slurpees and corn chips into the inner city, but there just isn't enough to go around.
And the so same, that, at the same time, they're sending in armed federal agents with machine guns to, raiding Amish farmers.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're providing that's nutritious food for hundreds of local families because those families are operating outside the big agri system, you know.
Yeah. So this is it. I mean, You know, there's really nothing, you know, it's important to clarify all these little episodes, the stuff we talk about, to try to put them in the correct concept so people can, you know, but on the other side, this is just a chronic repetitive structure. It's an overall structure. Once you understand it, the question is what to do. And, you know, the way, how do you fight? How do you fight against this? I would say in Europe, given that their situations, I mean, I don't know if you caught it, but in Poland, people were sleeping in cars for 2 or 3 days at a time to get coal.
Yeah.
Did you be following that? I mean, so
yeah.
In Germany, you know, like the towns are like going out into the forests and chopping wood to like stockpile this. This is, we had discussed years ago that all of these survivor shows that have come on, you know, are norm on television, are normalizing the idea of a post-electric world, you know, Naked and Afraid being the most absurd example of that. Well, this is what they've done. They have normalized and heroicized the individuals who are naked and afraid, that they are somehow, you know, on a vision quest, you know, that is like a positive thing. Well, now we are going to be an ethnicity that is naked and afraid if they can pull this off, because we're going to be in a post-electric world. We're going to be in a post-industrial world. Tim, the largest German steel manufacturer yesterday said they were closing up shop, that the economic models based on the cost of energy simply don't work, and they can't, you know, make any money producing steel. Well, there goes your industrial output.
Well, instead of closing up shop, why don't you organize to just throw the bums out who are imposing.
Exactly. That's the right approach. That's the only approach. Without that approach, you simply are condemning yourself to the naked and afraid ethnic environment.
But these people don't represent you. As I was listening to Ramsey Paul talking the other day, he was talking about America. America sort of has disintegrated, no longer really exists. And sort of the baby boomer generation is finding it's hard to believe. They still think you can appeal to civic values in America, but it's kind of gone now. It's been rotted out from within. It's been taken over by the alien people. I think he was alluding to a certain tribe. He didn't get specific, but they put on these what he calls skin suits, and then they pretend they're Americans, and they say you have to respect me because of my constitution, but they have no regard for the constitution, no regard for rule of law, and they act with abandon and utter criminality. And so once you're faced with that, sort of a system that's been infiltrated and taken over, no longer serve, even tries to give lip service to serving the majority population. What do you do? And that's what like the European people are confronted with that in France and in Poland and in Germany. I think we're confronted with that. There is some, the federal level, we've had some successes at the local level where like in Florida, 5 school boards were flipped. You had some local gubernatorial elections recently, largely in response to some of the insane leftist policies, like the transgender stuff and the critical race theory stuff, mobilized sort of the white vote in Virginia. There's some success there. But
that is so critical, Tim. It's so critical that there is this localism that is has an ethnic concern about survival and doesn't care as much about the propaganda issues that they use to control the federal elections with. It's just wonderful that that's happening.
Yeah, and they'll call you fascist, they'll call you racist. And okay, then if that's what's your definition of those things, then I am. Screw you. Okay, you're my enemy. Friends, enemy right. Distinction. That's what politics is all about. Let's go from there. One thing you saw with Biden's speech was it was acknowledgement of politics for what it is, which is another version of warfare. And he's calling out his friends and his enemies. No, he's he's not doing. He's but the powers that he represents, whether it's Susan Rice or Ron Klain or who's ever managing in the White House. But the point is, they're making those distinctions by claiming that they're the force of rule of law when they're not. And so at that point, when they declare war on you, it's not going to do any good to deny the fact that war's been declared upon you.
Right. It's self-defeating. Yeah. And so he's there, that kind of speech will inflame ethnic violence, right? Because Remember, they're going to try, and they will, when you can see how this is moving forward, Tim, they will take the position to the people in the inner city when the starvation comes that this is because the white people have stolen everything.
Oh, they'll do that same thing they did with South Africa with the Boer, right?
Exactly.
All your problems because of the Boer, even though everything they have is because of the Boer.
The MAGA extremists have taken the food. And so
it's the same thing. I'm going to say, we talk about Jackson, Mississippi. We talked off call about the water. If you look at who or what comprises the Jackson government, it's the capital of Mississippi. They don't have potable water anymore. They just run into the ground because they have this self-defined radical black government. Like, what's that? Chucky Lumumba is his name. And he says, I'm a radical, the most radical. Well, your city fell apart. So while you're preaching radicalism and crazy right racial politics, anti-white, pro-black, your city's falling apart.
They have the artificial.
And they're going to blame white people.
Right.
Same thing to do in South Africa. The problem in South Africa is because of apartheid,
This is probably the most difficult of the artificial dialectics to unravel. And I think that for Black Americans to see past the white people racism meme is probably the hardest intellectual task of all of the populations, right? It's just so difficult for them to get to a clarity because they have, of course, in fact, racism, in fact, slavery, in fact, servitude. And all of this, unfortunately, has just let them get to the point where if they have political power that this of a form, right, in a minor case, like with like the guy who runs the tin pot dictator that runs the streets of that city, they think that there's somehow progress is being made. I mean, Lori Lightfoot is a better example.
Yeah, well, they're like Idi Amin or Bukasa. Right. They don't they just preside over collapse.
They are in a entity, Chicago, which is literally going down the drain and has become uninhabitable. And yet they are seeing this in some of them as progress Because look, we have a black mayor and we can beat up white people.
Yeah, they've had seven straight black mayors in Jackson, Mississippi.
Right. And so that this is, they think that progress is being made when they don't understand that the whole thing is manipulation. It's all of it is manipulation. And so it's and it's manipulation with the intent of genocide. So anyway, it's going to be like you could see with the Black Lives Matter protests, Antifa, that white people were a second class and evil component of the habitants, right? And there was justification for violence against them.
Well, that's the whole focus of the civil rights laws, is imposing second class citizenship among whites. Now the deal there, and Christopher Caldwell writes about this in his book, Age of Entitlement, is that whites would put up with that rhetoric so long as they were economically dominant. And it sort of made sense. This is how you kind of lulled people into accepting it. But now they've been lulled into their servitude and their impoverishment. But the, they'll take it, but now they're losing even that, their economic status, which, so now you have a situation. Here's an example. Bank of America announced that it's going to be offering no down payment, low interest loans to only blacks and Hispanics. Now, I don't know how you qualify for being Hispanic, 50%, 10%, black, is it 10%? What, do you have to have a certain pigmentation? But nevertheless, blacks and Hispanics, and this is a big company, Bank of America, openly saying this, that they're going to discriminate against ethnic whites when they come in for loans. Now, the effect of this is going to be a lot of, same as in 2007, 2008, is a lot of foreclosures, unpaid loans. This will enable a lot of people getting access to neighborhoods where they do not belong, and they'll ruin the neighborhood. So a lot of trouble will be caused by this. But they're openly saying this, if you're white, you are a second-class citizen.
Exactly. And attacks, these political and economic attacks, are just going to get worse. You know, we are in a position now where the attacks are succeeding, and the goal of the attacks was to psychologically weaken us so that we don't resist. And where are the protests against such a obvious racist and illegal policy as the one the Bank of America has set up? Where is the reaction against that? It's almost seen as like, well, this is just normal. You see what I mean? They have normalized this kind of psychological attack, and now the white people, to use an expression, they don't even, it's so common now that no one even complains about it.
And it was the civil rights, a dream was set up to create frustration and failure, because it imposed this vision of equality where equality may not even exist. There are differences. Why is that even a presumed goal or situation? There's group differences. And in a free society, that's why you get liberty, fraternity, and equality. It's a slogan, and all three contradict each other. Now you have liberty, fraternity, and equity, because you can't have equality because groups are different. And the problem is, to get equality, you have to start analyzing each individual groups and maybe with the problems that they have, the chaos in their lives, the shortcomings, the cultural values, which may result in material differences. Good example is black kids used to watch, they still watch a heck of a lot more television than Asian kids. That's going to have an effect. Whether or not these differences are a problem, it's very subjective, because in my standpoint is inequality, depending on what's the cause of inequality, may not be a problem, because groups are different. There are, people are different. There are people different within groups. Well, white people are very diverse, right? I mean, you talk about white people.
White people, it's an absurd expression. Yeah. But I mean, the process by which Black Americans could have had political power and a better life were all in place following World War II, and they were basically the coming out of a strong family structure, right? I mean, it just clear as a bell, all the statistics are moving in the right direction. And then the federal Bolsheviks came up with the Great Society program.
Yeah, well, it was the Rockefellers and the American Jewish Committee, ADL. Yeah.
Right. And this is what has been destroying Black Americans. This is what this, and it is, they have never reversed the policies, which all made a U-turn in all of the statistics in terms of wealth and misery. And yet, you know, you don't have this discussed. This is something, and even now, you know, like when it's, there's all, literally no Black families left in some areas, you have this idea that's given to them that, well, all political power, if you have a mayor that's Black.
You want to run of running water, but you have a Black mayor.
Right, exactly. That you're having, this is a success, that somehow racism has now been defeated and you should be happy. Well, look, they, you know, let's just hope that as, you know, as the effects of the vaccine and the starvation.
Well, I mean, the idea was
there'll be a purification there, and you're going to have a cadre of Black intellectuals
The problem with civil rights is the whole thing is the whole idea has been Black grievance, Black victims, and white guilt. The situation is much more complicated than that. And I'm sorry if it doesn't follow the sort of the Disneyfication of history that we're given, you know, but it's far more complicated than that. You can't have chaos in your personal life and have peace in the public life. And the whole agenda of those controlling the culture since the 1960s has been promoting private chaos in the disguised as freedom, sexual liberation, as such. And you can't have that and expect a political utopia or political peace or public peace, a public square that's peaceful and orderly, because you've disorder in your private lives. And they've done everything to promote that for the past 67 years in the media, you know.
I mean, look, you Chicago, I mean, you've got a Black mayor. And you have
the Black mayor's a lesbian who's quote married to a Jewish gal,
right?
There's your political leadership in Chicago.
There's your political leadership, and you have these kind of wilding like break-ins that are not really contested, where you know the small businesses are being looted. Well, where does this go? This doesn't go to political power. This goes to genocide of the people inside Chicago. It's really no economically viable process that is actually moving forward. Everything is going down the drain, and the people are just told because you have Black leadership that this is, you know.
This goes back to how we opened our discussion about the accusations of people who are opposing Biden as being semi-fascist. Well, because what fascism is, it's a psychological appellation or label. It's a psychological, this is all according to their outlook, the authoritarian personality. To be a fascist is basically just to have normal values, meaning sexual continence, responsibility, a father, a family, a community, order, hierarchy, respect
ethnic
for
pride. Ethnic pride.
All that. All that's being shattered.
Ethnocentrism was neurosis in the authoritarian personality.
All that is shattered to create atomized individuals, and this is what you got today. And you can't turn around and go, what's happening? You know, because when they accuse you of being, everyone who wants a halfway normal life is going to be a semi-fascist or not a full-blown fascist based on their psychological understanding of this stuff. To them, they pathologize these things. It's politics is ultimately psychological. It's about manipulating the mass psyche of these things. And they've labeled normal, responsible behavior as being pathological and must be destroyed, and they control the upper, you know, the higher positions of culture and the economy and politics
and the media
Yeah. Yeah, you know. So, there you have.
Yeah, there you have. Well said, brother. All right.
Okay, Joe.
We'll get them next week. Thank you, sir.
Charge up the car while you can.
I can. No, don't worry. I have solar panels.
That's right. You're in. Yeah, you're separate from that. So yeah.
All right.
Okay. Take it easy.
Bye bye. Yeah. You too. Bye.